Good evening, everybody. We're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back with you here tonight on Tuesday with some breaking news, big news tonight. I wasn't going to do the show. You know, maybe you can hear that my voice is a little bit strained. I am a bit under the weather. I'm very sick, but I've taken some medicine. I've drank some tea, and now I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling a little bit up to the challenge here, but there's big news, so we have to do the show. World War III is commencing. We have just witnessed over the last hour the Iranian counterattack, their revenge for the killing of Qasem Soleimani last week. So we've seen a missile attack that originated from Iran on Iraqi bases where American where American forces are being housed currently. I believe that the attack is over, and that's why the show is postponed. You know, I was about to call, it's funny how that works, isn't it? I was about to call off the show. I was minutes away from posting on Twitter, YouTube, Telegram. The show's canceled. I'm sick. My throat hurts too bad. I can't do it. And I kid you not, like minutes before this happens, breaking news, Iran is launching a major counterattack inside of Iraq. Major missile attack from Iran on American forces in Iraqi bases. And I said, okay, so we have to do the show. And I did want to wait until the events of tonight concluded before I went live. I was considering going live on DLive and, you know, covering it play by play. But it looks like now the attack, the counterattack is over, so we can have some kind of an idea now that the dust has settled of what exactly has transpired and what might happen in the next 24 hours. The gist of what happened is that Iran launched dozens of missiles at U.S. bases. In particular, they attacked bases in Al-Asad, which is this billion-dollar military base that the United States built in Iraq. This is one that the president talked about earlier this week. You know, Iraq, they passed a non-binding resolution yesterday saying that they want the United States to withdraw all troops from Iraq. The president said on Air Force One that we're not going anywhere because we have bases like Al-Asad that we spent billions of dollars to build. So that's one of the bases that was struck, as well as, and I think this is unconfirmed at this point, as well as a base in Erbil, Iraq. So it looks like Iran launched a total of 15 missiles at these two bases. Four of the 15 missiles failed to reach their target, so it looks like only 11 missiles actually struck these two bases. So far, only Iraqi casualties have been confirmed at this point. It's a little bit dicey about who has died, who has been injured in this attack, what assets have been affected by this. But it looks like at this point, American Air Force has been targeted. Planes have been damaged. Helicopters potentially have been damaged. And it looks like the only casualties are Iraqis and no Americans have been injured or killed. That's what it looks like so far. But of course, that may be subject to change. They are still surveying the damage right now. But that's what we have so far is 15 missiles launched. 11 of them have struck in Al-Asad and Erbil, Iraq. What we've heard from Iran is that Iran will stop attacking the United States if the United States does not retaliate for this strike. So I guess this is the first wave, so to speak. They've attacked these two bases. It appears to be over at this point in time. Iran has said that they will not proceed with further attacks or other ways of attacks if the United States does not respond to what happened tonight. And this is according to the Spectator Index. It says the Iranian Revolutionary Guard has threatened to strike Haifa in Israel and Dubai in the United Arab Emirates if the U.S. retaliates after the strikes tonight. So it looks like we have this first wave of attacks against American bases inside of Iraq. If the United States retaliates, then Iran has promised to attack Israel and the United Arab Emirates, and that would be a real shame. I surely hope that we do not escalate this any further. So to me, I saw this response, and I was actually, I'm going to read a more full report in a moment from Fox News, but my initial reaction to all of this, if this is the response, is, that's it? Seriously? Honestly, to me, this is a breath of fresh air. This is very encouraging, very white-pilling if this is the extent of Iran's counter-response. Now, of course, the United States will have an opportunity to respond, and they can either take that opportunity and respond, or we can de-escalate the situation and refrain from responding in a military fashion, right? So we're not out of the woods just yet, but if this is what constitutes the Iranian counterattack, this does give the United States a lot of options in terms of how we want to respond. And the reason for that is because this does not constitute an escalation. You know, we went over the whole timeline last night on the show, and I showed you from 2018 all the way up through to last week how we arrived here. And I saw some people on Twitter said, 2018, you have to go back to 1953. As if I don't know that. You know, we had to cover a lot of ground yesterday. We can't go back to that. We could go back to the beginning of time. We could go back to the crucifixion, right? But, you know, I showed you how, with this administration in particular, hostilities have escalated with Iran more so than in the previous administration as a result of us withdrawing from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. So I showed you how we got from there all the way to the killing of Qasem Soleimani. And my verdict last night on the show is that the reason why Trump's assassination of Qasem Soleimani was a mistake is it because it constituted a disproportionate escalation. You know, that's the key phrase there. Whereas we have seen these sort of tit-for-tat exchanges in the Middle East for a long time. For example, we saw last summer the tanker incident in the Gulf of Oman in May, and then in June, the drone that was shot down over the Persian Gulf. Then we retaliated with cyber strikes and so on. The reason that that was, I mean, relatively uneventful compared to the latest episode is because all of our responses were proportionate and did not escalate. You know, if Iran allegedly attacked tankers in the Gulf of Oman, we responded with economic sanctions. You know, this is not introducing anything dramatically new into the equation by ratcheting up sanctions. You know, some might argue that ratcheting up sanctions doesn't even actually effectively do anything. That to an extent, we've already gone really as far as we can go with sanctions. In a certain sense, you know, certainly we could escalate further with sanctions and take it to a whole different level, but where we are with sanctions right now without imposing hardcore secondary sanctions and, you know, sanctioning more critical things, that's about as far as we can go. We kind of reached that maybe 2 years ago, right? With the shooting down of the American drone over the Persian Gulf, we responded by shooting down an unmanned drone of theirs, allegedly. The difference in this week is that in response to this Iranian-backed militia's demonstration in front of our embassy, we went and we assassinated one of the most powerful people in Iran, a government official, the leader of the IRGC, the leader of the Quds forces within the IRGC. That was a huge disproportionate escalation. And the reason why that was cause for concern is the question becomes, if we are going to escalate to that level, how can Iran retaliate to save face? We forced them, and I said this all last night, but to reiterate, by doing that, we forced them essentially, forced their hand to retaliate in some capacity that would be striking, that would be, you know, no pun intended, but, you know, what would be a strike that would send a message, there would be a retaliation that would communicate to the United States that Iran will not be pushed around, that kind of thinking. And so for the past few days, I think myself and a lot of other people have been wondering, what exactly will this Iranian response look like? Are they going to attack civilians? Will they attack on American soil? Will they attack American allies? Will they attack American military in the Middle East? Now we've got a response, and I have to say it's relatively muted. Compared to killing Qasem Soleimani, 15 missiles? Four of them don't even hit. They don't even kill a single person, at least a single American. I mean, to me, this is about as muted as it can get. And my position after this is Trump must take this opportunity to de-escalate. We have been given a huge opportunity here. By the grace of God, you know, Iran has backed down from the brink of war. Hopefully nothing is blowing up, again, no pun intended, on the timeline right now. You know, hopefully there's not a huge announcement about something else that's going on while I'm saying this to you, because this is only, you know, so many minutes after the initial wave of attacks. But if they've only done 15 missiles launched at American bases, and apparently the people that are in the Middle East, American forces, they detected the missiles as they were launched. they got all of our troops into shelter and into bunkers so that they were protected. If that's the extent of the Iranian counter-response to us killing the second most powerful Iranian government official in the country, we have been given a great gift. We have been given an out. This allows us to save face, you know, and perhaps we retaliate in some fashion. I think it would be advisable simply to stop retaliating at all. If we kill their second-in-command general and they launch 15 missiles and don't even kill anybody, I say that's a good deal, right? I would say that, not saying like the killing of Soleimani was a good thing. I think it was tremendously reckless, but you understand what I'm saying, that if that's the extent of the Iranian response, that does not force us into something that will further escalate the situation, continue the cycle of rising tensions and things like that. So to me, I think the president at this point should take the opportunity to de-escalate, you know, maybe some kind of symbolic response, sanctions, something like that. But I look at this as, you know, this to me is the sign that maybe we can avert World War III. But I'll read you, this is from Fox News, this is sort of a full report on what happened tonight. It says, Iran fired more than a dozen ballistic missiles into Iraq, targeting U.S. military and coalition forces early Wednesday, according to Pentagon officials. The missiles launched by Iran targeted military bases in Al-Asad and Erbil. Initial assessments showed no U.S. casualties, according to a U.S. military official in Baghdad. President Trump did not immediately respond, and the White House eventually said he would not make an address to the nation or other on-camera statement on Tuesday. White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham said after the attack, quote, "We are aware of the reports of attacks on U.S. facilities in Iraq. The president has been briefed and is monitoring the situation." There's that phrase again. "Closely and consulting with his national security team, it was not immediately clear how the U.S. may respond." The Pentagon added, quote, "In recent days, in response to Iranian threats and actions, the Department of Defense has taken all appropriate measures to safeguard our personnel and partners. These bases have been on high alert due to indications that the Iranian regime planned to attack our forces and interests in the region. As we evaluate the situation and our response, we will take all necessary measures to protect and defend U.S. personnel, partners, and allies in the region." In the meantime, Iranian state TV claimed Tehran launched tens of surface-to-surface missiles at the Al-Asad airbase. State TV described it as Tehran's revenge over the killing of Soleimani. Iran's Revolutionary Guard then warned the U.S. and its regional allies against retaliating over the missile attack in Iraq. The Guard issued the warning via a statement carried by Iran's state-run IRNA news agency. They say, quote, "We are warning all American allies who gave their bases to its terrorist army that any territory that is the starting point of aggressive acts against Iran will be targeted." The Guard in the warning also threatened Israel. I have to say there is a little bit of irony in the fact that it's devolved now into just every country calling each other terrorists, you know? There is sort of an irony in the fact that the United States, for the past, like, four decades, has called every militant group in the Middle East, you know, every militia, every non-state actor, a terrorist group. Every country that sponsors militant groups is a state sponsor of terrorism. And so it's an irony now that, I mean, this word has just really lost any kind of weight behind it. Now Iran says, well, the United States is sponsoring a terrorist army. We deserve this. You know, we deserve not to be attacked, but you understand, to have this word sort of lose its weight. You know, if we're just going to throw it around at everybody, Iran's just going to throw around at everybody. I mean, there is a little bit of irony and humor in that. It says, Iran's Revolutionary Guard then warned the U.S. and its regional allies against... I just read that part. The latest U.S. intelligence assessment showed Iran had more than 2,000 ballistic missiles, according to Pentagon officials. The USS Harry Truman aircraft carrier strike group has been in the Gulf of Oman, along with guided missile destroyers, a guided missile cruiser, and at least one submarine. The Navy warships and submarine together had hundreds of Tomahawk cruise missiles with pre-planned targets locked into the missiles. The ships would be ready to fire if given the order, according to two senior Pentagon officials. So, where we are right now after the week's events, you know, we see the tit-for-tat. December 27th, you have this Hezbollah group that launches missiles against an American base in Kirkuk within Iraq. This is the 11th such attack in the last 2 months of Iranian-backed militias using missiles against Iraqi bases that house U.S. forces. We responded to this on the 29th of December of 2019 by launching an airstrike against 5 targets, 3 in Iraq, 2 in Syria, against Hezbollah. Hezbollah responds on December 31st by showing up to the American embassy in Baghdad, and they demonstrate, they set fires. The Iraqi government allows them into the green zone. This is a rift, a row between the United States and Iraq now, the Iraqi government. The United States responds to these embassy protests as well as all the missile strikes in the previous 2 months by killing the head of the Quds forces, Qasem Soleimani. And now Iran has retaliated. That was on the 3rd. And now on the 7th, Iran has retaliated after 3 days of mourning by launching 15 missiles against 2 or 1 American bases within Iraq. So now the question becomes, as has been the case, you know, now what is America going to do? You know, after we killed Qasem Soleimani, we passed the ball to Iran. And the message of the show yesterday is we have to wait and see what Iran does. The ball is in Iran's court. Iran has now passed the ball back to us. And now we wonder, what will the United States do? Now the ball is in our court. And as I said, you know, I think at this point, we have to be very, I will say, I'm not going to say anything specific, but we have to be very judicious in our response. We have to be very judicious and considerate of the possibility to escalate. Because I will say something, that this was such a muted response, and it totally was. This is totally backing down. It's totally a de-escalation on Iran's part. It's so funny to see all these people that were coping so hard about the heritage sites and Qasem Soleimani being killed. You know, the mighty Iran-based mighty Iran, what is their response? After all that tough talk and bluster about attacking the White House or the president or anything else, what do they end up doing? 15 missiles against a couple of air bases, and they don't even kill anybody? Seriously? And what that exposes is that Iran really has nothing. They're bluffing. Their economy's been destroyed. Their currency is worth nothing. Their military is not close to as powerful as it was before Trump got into office. And we called their bluff. They've been sponsoring these militias in these different countries, and the militias have been attacking American forces. And we finally, you know, we ignored it when they allegedly attacked the tankers. And by the way, I don't know if that was totally legitimate, but, you know, that's what international news media reported. We basically ignored it when they shot down the drone. They do the missile strikes against American forces. We kill their general. And now we see that there's really not much weight behind all that bluster, that Iran really is sort of a paper tiger. For as much as they talk about, you know, death to America and all this apocalyptic rhetoric about bringing down the United States, this is what happens when push comes to shove, 15 missiles. Now, all of that having been said, a lot of boomers will take that and say, so let's destroy Iran. Wrong. Wrong. If Iran is such a weak country, why bother, right? If Iran is such a weak country, and in doing this, in this muted response, and in pulling back and de-escalating, what they're communicating to us, in other words, is they pose no threat to our country. So why push them any farther, right? At this point in time, if the question is we should either retaliate heavily for this and continue the escalation, or we should, you know, show some restraint, pull ourselves back from the brink as well, do our part in de-escalating, of course, we have to consider the fact that we do not want to be in the Middle East. We don't want to be in the countries that we are currently in. We do not want to be in more countries like Iran. We have just seen, you know, if you look at the events over the last couple of years, you know, you could really look at the events of the last couple of decades. Have we not learned our lesson? Our intervention in Iraq was a disaster. Our intervention in Afghanistan was a disaster. Our intervention in Syria is a disaster. In Yemen, disaster. Libya, it's a disaster. Egypt, you could even say, wasn't even military, but it's a disaster. It's enough. It's time to come home. It seems to me that every time we do something in the Middle East, it makes things worse and not better. Every time we do something in the Middle East, we get drawn further in, and it makes it harder for us to get out. So let us take this opportunity. Iran has backed down. They've showed the world that they're pussies. And let's say that's the best you can do. We're not going to respond. And let's begin withdrawing from Iraq. You know, it doesn't have to be right, you know, right this minute. Because I think if we started pulling troops out of Iraq at this point, it might look weak or it might look like we're responding to this. Ultimately, I think it doesn't matter. We have no business in Iraq. We have no business in the broader Middle East. Let's start to pull the troops out and let the sanctions, the economic, political, diplomatic measures, let's let those measures have their effect. Let's let them work their magic without having to spend any more money or any more time in the Middle East. I see what's gone on over the past 24 hours. But to me, it was very vindicating. A lot of people, whenever anything like this happens in the world, you know, I don't know if it's people are ignorant about, like, world affairs or they just can't control their emotions, but I've been doing this show for 3 years, and every time there is a major escalation in tensions, a flare-up, a crisis, people get sent over the edge. You know, I remember the first time it happened was the Syria strikes in April 2017. And I will never forget the timeline. Friday. It was on a Friday. I think it was like April 13th, 2017. I don't remember the exact date, but it was on a Friday that America made its official position. We changed our official position 3 months after the inauguration that our intention was not to remove Bashar al-Assad from power. We were not seeking regime change in Syria. Within like 4 days, it was on a Tuesday, within 4 days, Bashar al-Assad uses chemical weapons. We respond with, 52 missiles attacking an air base that wasn't even occupied. We didn't even kill anybody. And I remember people flipped out. They said that on June 1st, America was sending 100,000 troops to Syria, and all bets are off, and it's World War III, and America's going in. And as always, you got to look at the bigger picture. As always, you got to think long and hard about logistics and, you know, capabilities and interest and motivations and all this kind of thing. And after surveying the damage, I said, you know, look, this was really like a non-strike. Didn't really do any damage. If you looked at who was at Mar-a-Lago at the time, it was Xi Jinping during these negotiations with North Korea. You know, it wasn't negotiations at that point. It was a lot of brinksmanship and whatever. But, you know, if you looked at the bigger context at the time, you realized, okay, everything's going to be okay. And I view it, the reason I bring it up is it's the same thing that's happening with Iran. You know, we killed Qasem Soleimani, and I legitimately was concerned for some time that, you know, maybe Iran would do something extremely reckless. Maybe they would kill civilians. Maybe they would attack America on American soil. But at the end of the day, what's fascinating to me about Iran is for all the rhetoric that we hear from neocons about Iran, about the fact that it's run by mullahs. That's what we hear from like Sean Hannity, Fox News, Ben Shapiro, all the neocons and Zionists and Israelis that would love nothing more than for more Americans to die in the Middle East. We hear from them that Iran is run by religious fanatics, these extremist Muslims. It's run by religious scholars that chant death to America, and they're going to develop a nuclear arsenal, and they've got this apocalyptic version of Shiite Islam that, you know, they're going to bring about the 12th Imam and blow up the world and blow up Israel. For all this sensational, ridiculous, alarmist, completely nonsensical rhetoric about Iran, we see that in every case, they conduct themselves rationally. They conduct themselves as a rational state actor, right? You know, in this case, if Iran was this nuclear threat, run by fanatical mullahs, they will destroy America. You know, you would think that a country like that would do more than 15 missile strikes. But Iran knows that if they seriously inflicted damage on America, they would instigate a huge counter response that would hurt them in their country. I mean, they know they're outgunned with conventional arms as well as the fact that we have weapons of mass destruction. They wouldn't risk that. So to me, this communicates that Iran wants to de-escalate the situation. You know, these provocations were intended to get the United States to rethink its maximum pressure economic strategy. The provocations, the alleged provocations in the Strait of Hormuz, the drone, the pro-Iranian militias in Iraq and these other countries, the intention is to get America to rethink its maximum pressure sanctions campaign. But, you know, when we call their bluff by retaliating disproportionately, well, then they rethink their strategy of making us rethink maximum pressure. So now they're thinking, okay, well, You know, we want the maximum pressure campaign to end, but we also don't want to get bombed. We also don't want to get destroyed, right? So I think that's what we're seeing tonight. Now, it remains to be seen if we'll see anything more from Iran. You know, it's very possible that there will be further attacks by Iran. It's very possible that there will be an attack in Israel or the Emirates or Saudi Arabia or maybe in Europe or maybe in the United States. You know, who really knows if this is truly the end? I think it's also worth considering maybe there's a false flag attack. Is nobody considering the possibility that the Zionists and neocons, if they don't get the response from Iran that they want, that they'll create the response that they want? Do you know what I'm saying? That in other words, if Iran is going to do this very muted response, 15 missiles, I mean, this is really nothing in the grand scheme of things. Do you think that the Zionists, Israel, neocons, unsatisfied with their Iranian response that is not going to draw us into war, will they create a provocation and blame it on Iran? Will they create a provocation in the United States? Will they create a provocation in Europe, in Israel, in the Gulf states? It's very possible. It's my opinion that that's what got us into all these countries in the first place. Draw your own conclusions about that. But it's my opinion that, you know, our involvement in the Middle East to begin with is a result of this kind of false flag, you know, very dubious, shady tactics by people that want us there to begin with. You know, if you look at the record of history, it was on September 10th, 2001, that the plans for a war in Afghanistan arrived on George W. Bush's desk. Read into that what you will. So to me, right now, it's a very precarious time. As I said, we've been gifted an opportunity here to de-escalate and pull back, but there's a lot of possibilities. Could Iran attack further? I think that would be irrational and unlikely. Could there be a false flag? You know, could there be some other actor, we all know who, that would want to draw us further in by doing some kind of attack of their own and blaming it on Iran? And then the last possibility where this could go awry is that the president messes this up by doing some kind of huge counter response and forcing Iran's hand to attack other countries or escalate even further, you know. So there are possibilities where the situation can change rapidly or escalation could be back on. But, you know, for the moment, I do predict that Trump will pull us back. I think that. And I think that we'll be okay for now. And, you know, to me, my position all along has been that the president really does not want more wars in the Middle East. I know a lot of people are out there saying they watch this show or that are in the, you know, non-interventionist, isolationist camp. You know, they say Trump is Israel first. Trump is, you know, sold America out. Trump is a neocon. He's been co-opted. John Bolton lives on even though he was fired. And I get where they're coming from. Obviously, we have more troops in the Middle East than when Trump got into office, which is horrible. That's a catastrophe. None of the wars have ended since Trump got into office, and actually some of them have expanded. Some new ones have started, right? So I understand where they're coming from, but throughout the past 3 years, we really have seen a tremendous amount of restraint. How quickly people forget that it was just last summer that whether Iran did attack those tankers in the Gulf of Oman, whether they did or whether they didn't, did America retaliate against Iran? Not really. Right? And I think it was probably a false flag, the tankers in the Gulf of Oman last May and then again last June. We didn't respond. When Iran shot down an American drone a week later, Trump was locked and loaded. You know, we were on, we were prepared, ready to strike. They made it out like, you know, planes were about to take off to start bombing radar and missile sites in Iran before Trump pulled it back. We didn't respond in that way. We didn't bomb Iran. That's a tremendous amount of restraint. How about all the Syria strikes? You know, every time a Syria strike happened, people would say, oh, America's going to do regime change in Syria. We haven't done regime change in Syria. In fact, what we've done is clean up ISIS, or help to clean up ISIS, while Bashar al-Assad consolidates control of the government. And it's the official policy of this administration to not pursue regime change in Syria. Also this August. And now, granted, it's not the withdrawal that I wanted to see, but the president did withdraw a significant amount of troops from Syria. We left a residual force of so many, we don't really know the totals, but so many hundreds of troops are in northeastern Syria protecting oil fields. But nevertheless, we pulled out a significant amount of those troops into Iraq. So I do see whether or not it's been completely successful or fully realized. There is a concerted effort, I feel, on the part of the president to mitigate these conflicts. Now, understand what he's up against. He's up against the Pentagon. He's up against the DOD. He's up against the military-industrial complex, the Israel lobby, Sheldon Adelson. You know, Sheldon Adelson said, I think it was a few years ago, that he thinks we should nuke Iran. And Sheldon Adelson is one of the biggest political contributors, one of the single biggest contributors to political campaigns in the last election. And who do you think he gave all his money to, right? Sheldon Adelson's responsible for a lot of the disasters in this administration. Jewish Zionist, by the way. You know, so I see all the forces arrayed against Trump, all the people pushing in the direction towards more war, escalation, ground forces getting involved. And I see that there is, whether it's all the way successful or fully realized every time, I do see a concerted effort on the part of Trump to pull us back. So that's not to say that it'll be like that forever. It's not to say that this is like a great situation to be in. It's obviously not ideal. What we'd like to see is all the wars to be over. Maybe it's more complicated than that. But I'm not ready to say that Trump is all the way out just yet. Now, that's a different story from him giving all the gibs to Israel. You know, we know that Sheldon Adelson and all the Zionist money has allowed or has facilitated the White House, for example, naming the IRGC a terrorist group, recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, moving the embassy to Jerusalem. So it's not to say that Israel hasn't gotten any bang for its buck, right? It's not to say that the Zionists have not gotten their, what they paid for at this administration, but it hasn't fully materialized in terms of foreign policy. In the case of Syria, I know that Israel and AIPAC were not happy that we canceled regime change. They were not happy that we've tried to pull out of the region last December 2018 and August 2019. They were not happy that we backed down last summer after the Gulf of Oman incident and the drone being shot down over the Persian Gulf. They weren't happy about that. They weren't happy about the fact that we're negotiating with the Taliban to get us out of Afghanistan. So, you know, if Trump in a meaningful way goes back on his promises, and by that I mean, you know, if we go to war with Iran, you know, that, okay, it's over, right? It's over, forget it. I'm not voting for him, probably. If he goes to war with Iran, then that would be a bridge too far. That would be crossing the Rubicon. If we pursue regime change in Syria, I'd say it's over, right? If we start another war, I'd say it's over. If there was a huge troop surge, you know, tens of thousands of troops going back in, I would say it's over. But I think that he's done a, you know, pretty admirable job of holding the line against the neocons. And I know that might be controversial, but if you lay out the body of evidence, it's I think that's the only reasonable take. Granted, it's not, like I said, it's not ideal. I don't love the fact that there's still 50,000 troops in the Middle East, but, you know, compared to the alternative, compared to if Marco Rubio had been president or Hillary Clinton, I think it would have been a totally different equation, and that's worth something, particularly in Syria and Iran. So, now again, all of this is highly contingent on how he decides to move forward over the course of this week. If there's a major retaliation, this could easily draw us into a conflict with Iran, and that would be, it's hard to overstate how disastrous that would be. But then again, I think Trump can show us that he's committed to, non-interventionism, committed to pulling us out of the Middle East by de-escalating and showing some restraint. It's really the hour of decision for the president. And we'll see over the next 48 hours what the response will be like, and then we'll figure out who Trump really is. If Trump pulls us into war with Iran, then he was a neocon all along and a Zionist and so on. You know, I'll happily concede all that. But if he shows restraint and de-escalates, I think that'll show that, this has been a strategy of containment, that Trump is trying to keep us out of these wars. And I would say that would be pretty commendable if he were to pull us back from the brink. You know, he made a mistake, I think. Whoops. He made a mistake, I think, with Qasem Soleimani, and we can make mistakes. If he decides to pull back, well, then I think we can say that it will not have been a disastrous, it will not have been a fatal mistake for this administration or the country. You know, still don't think it was a great idea. I still think it was completely reckless. It could have gone a very different way. But I think, in effect, he ended up calling Iran's bluff. This is sort of a way of negotiating. And if he does de-escalate, then we'll be better off for it, I think. Well, maybe not better off for it, but we won't be at war, and that's a good thing. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to check Twitter real quick and see if we have any new developments here while I've been talking. That's always the problem. Whenever there's breaking news, it's not as natural. Some shows you have, like, you know, they have their monitor, you know, their screen is like in the corner. If they've got their Twitter timeline on most of the screen, or like a news desk or something. But it's always a little awkward covering the breaking news on this show. So let's see. We've got from the Spectator Index, the only updates are U.S. official says there was minimal damage in the Iranian attack. And then Iran's foreign minister says the missile strike were proportionate and carried out in self-defense. Okay, well then, if that's the response, then we're in really good shape. You know, Iran has said the attack is over. The U.S. has said the damage is minimal. We have been given a great gift. We have been saved here tonight. Now it's all on Trump. Now all eyes are on Trump, just as all eyes were on Iran earlier this week. Now all eyes are on Trump. What will he do with this opportunity? You know, he was really given a second chance, or he could have really fucked it up. You know, pardon the language, but it's warranted here. He could have really fucked it up bad if he killed Qasem Soleimani and Iran retaliated in a similarly reckless way. If they called, right, or if they escalated, that could have been some really bad stuff. But surprisingly, Iran, the fanatical mullahs, have showed tremendous restraint. They have called off World War III, and now Trump has to call. You know, Trump has to call off World War III with them. I hope that happens, but we'll see. I will say that this is more evidence, perhaps, that, you know, whenever we see bluster from any country, you always have to separate out rhetoric from action. A lot of people have a very hard time doing this. You know, for example, when Trump said, we will attack 52 sites, including cultural, you know, institutions, and everybody freaks out, to tweet. You know, and it's like when Trump said about North Korea, the world will see fire and fury, the likes of which nobody has ever seen before. As always, you have to separate out rhetoric from action. Iran does the same thing. Death to America, death to Israel. We're going to wipe Israel off the map. And they respond with this shit. Okay, you have to separate out rhetoric from action. Rhetoric is a tool of statecraft. Have to understand that. If you want to analyze politics, you have to understand that what leaders say, if it's true or not, influences the actions of other states. It is a tool of statecraft. So people are not always communicating their earnest intentions explicitly. That's not, you know, political communication on the level of a head of state is not the same as you and I talking. You know, if I go to, a flea market, and I'm haggling with somebody, you know, some honest guy, and I'm like, well, you know, I'll give you $10 for it. This is not the same as the president saying, unless you do this, we will, you know, mess your stuff up. We will bomb cultural institutions. It's not the same. Because at the level of a head of state, at the level of a president, if the president threatens another country, it's just like in a game of poker. You have the idea of bluffing. You have the idea of exaggerating. You know, if you create a certain framework using conditional language, this changes the calculus of a different country. This is very simple stuff. This is very simple negotiating tactics, right? If Trump says, we're going to just like nuke Iran if they respond, well, this is going to change what Iran's response is. If the United States, you know, if President Trump comes out and says, we don't want war. We don't want war with Iran. We really don't want war. Oh, it's time we get out of the Middle East. Well, what's Iran going to do? They're going to do a big counter-response if they think they can get away with it, right? If they can do a huge counter-response and save face and look tough because they perceive that America is eager to withdraw from the region, eager for an excuse to de-escalate, well, then that's what they'll do. Contrast that with if President Trump says, I'm going to bomb 52 sites for the 52 hostages. You know, I'm sure he's just making it up at this point. I'm sure he's just, you know, sitting on a recliner, 52 sites for 52 hostages, right? I'll commit war crimes. I'll fucking commit war crimes, you know? And people take this seriously, and then people freak out and say, this is terrible. How could Trump say this? He's destroying history. He's violating international law. That's the desired effect. And Iran is thinking the same thing. They're thinking, oh boy, we better relax, you know? If we respond, it's going to get worse for us. They killed our second-in-command guy. How could they escalate any further? I think you know, right? So to me, it's another lesson in you know, analyzing the stuff as always. More vindication, right? Whenever you introduce any nuances, neocon, whatever. We hate neocons. We hate, you know, Zionist warmongers on this show. People who want to pull us into the Middle East for wars for Israel. We don't, believe me, we're not about that on the show if you watch it, right? But we also have a little bit of nuance about analyzing these dynamics that exist in geopolitics. You know, that said, we have, you know, it's always worth reminding everybody why the guns are pointed at Iran to begin with. You know, these people are not a threat to us, right? So anyway, so it looks like that is the extent of the response, and so we are in good shape. But I think we're going to take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys are saying about all of this. There's really not even much here. You know, I was going to do this big show, and it was going to be like breaking news, Iran counterattack. But the counterattack is such a nothing. There's really not even much more to say about it other than nothing ever happens, Anon. Nothing ever happens. Every time, without fail. You know, World War III, India and Pakistan. Nothing ever happens, Anon. You know, they figure it out. Crisis averted. American drone shot down in the Persian Gulf. Nothing ever happens, Anon. You know, North Korea does their 7th nuclear warhead test. Nothing ever happens. Nothing will result from this. Serious strikes. Do you know how many crises I've seen come and go in the last 4 years without incidents? This is not. Listen, Sonny. Well, listen here, kiddo. This is not my first rodeo. I saw the serious strikes in April 17, in April 2018, in I think it was August 2018. More serious strikes. How many times did they say they were going to topple the Venezuelan government? Like 1,000 times? 1,000 times? 1,000,000 people are in Caracas. Is it Caracas? Caracas. Is Caracas the capital of Venezuela? No. Is it? I don't think it is. Let me just check real quick. Yeah. 1,000,000 people are in Caracas protesting. The fall of the Maduro regime is imminent. I mean, that happened like 1,000,000 times. India and Pakistan about to blow each other up. Okay. For like the, what, 10,000 times since like the 70s? So, you know, crises come and go. Generals die. but America First remains the same. but America First with Nicholas J. Fuentes remains the same. So yeah, nothing ever happens, Anon. Just what he thought. You know, there's a part of me, most of me was like deeply affected by this. Oh, I sure hope we don't go to war with Iran. I really hope we don't go to war with Iran. I don't want to die in Tehran. I want to live to see my 22nd birthday. I don't want to implement gay marriage in Iran. But, you know, a small part of me was like, maybe, just maybe this one time something will happen. You know, man, hand rubbing, you know, I'm on vacation. I'm at Baked Alaska's house. Me and Baked Alaska, you know, we are agents of Zog. Maybe, just maybe, something will happen. Something that will show that we can deviate from the planned trajectory, right? Something that will show that we're still alive. That the world isn't just predictable and, right? That we're not just piano keys. We're not just automatons. Our behavior cannot just be predicted by a mathematical formula. You know, small parties like maybe, just maybe, shit's really gonna hit the fan this time. And, you know, it's a very terrible, it's a very, you know, primitive impulse, sick and troubling, disturbing. But nothing ever happens. Thank God. I'm breathing a huge sigh of relief. Thank God nothing cool happened. I mean, nothing terrible happened. That'd be so bad. That is a joke. I am joking when I say that, by the way. I do this joke every time and people get so offended. Everybody's so appalled whenever I do that joke. No, I don't actually want war with Iran. I am just memeing. I have to say, I guess I have to have a disclaimer every time now, given the controversies in the last so many weeks. Okay, this is ironic. But yeah, so it looks like we're going to be okay. A war with Iran is canceled. America is still epic. But we're going to get into our super chats. We'll see what you guys are saying about all of this. We'll see what the reaction is. My throat hurts so bad. So I'm going to try and keep it kind of short tonight. My apologies if that's disappointing, but I mean, I'm like dying over here. I'm going to have to get a good night's sleep and drink plenty of fluid so my voice will return tomorrow. when nothing will be happening, right? when nothing will be happening. Oh, no war with Iran. Great. me thinking about how I'll have nothing to talk about for the next 3 weeks. Oh, no war with Iran. Awesome. You know, great. That's so good. No, I'm kidding. That is a joke. But there is something funny. There is something funny about the fact that, like, when I'm not doing the show, World War III is on. When I am doing the show, it's off. When I'm about to cancel a show, it's on. Iran is retaliating. Okay, I will do the show. Oh, nobody even died. 15 missiles. Isn't that? It's like, it's SpongeBob. I feel like SpongeBob in Rock Bottom, you know, reaching into the vending machine, going for my Kelp bar. And every time I touch it, the bus comes, you know, that's... My Zoomers are going to understand that reference. You know, it's like me doing the show and like World War III, you know? I'm grabbing, doing the show. World War III passes by every time. No huge events that I get to cover. Breaking news, live events. Damn it. And if there was a draft, I would have gotten I just say I'm autistic. I just get a diagnosis. I'd go to some, you know, therapist. I'd slip him $500 and he'd write me a letter and say, oh, he's autistic. I don't know what it costs to get a fake letter like that. But, I go to a therapist or I go to a mental health doctor. Yeah, I'm autistic. And I'd be cozy, you know, watching World War III in my pajamas, playing Civ 5 and, you know, just watching it transpire. Autistic neat mode. Why aren't you fighting in Tehran? I'm autistic. I have Asperger's or something. I don't know. So kidding. We can make jokes like that because we're safe. We can make jokes like that because we're safe now. But let's get into the super chats. Finally, Joshua Larson says, "Revenge of the Sand People." Yes, they are avenging, the Tusken Raiders killed by Anakin. Op4 says, finally, some good content. Yeah. Racist Incel says, what's the point of fighting for our views if you think that the 1,000 years of darkness are inevitable at this point? We're still going to keep fighting, even if there's a... When I say 1,000 years of darkness, that's hyperbole, number one. But all I mean to say about that is things are going to become very, very difficult. Not impossible, but they're going to become very difficult. And this is an intergenerational struggle. Just because we won't realize victory in our lifetimes, it might be sad to hear, but it's also a strong possibility. It doesn't mean that we don't have to carry the torch. If you look at history, you look at like the Hundred Years' War, you look at the Muslim conquest of Europe, and then, you know, the subsequent reconquest of Europe. There's such a thing as generational struggle. And so the idea that at a certain point in time, things are going to become, you know, immeasurably more difficult for us, and that this will become this multi-generational struggle over many generations. I mean, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be fighting or trying or doing our part. It just means that, you know, we shouldn't expect our fortunes to wildly turn around overnight. Zach Fisher says, can't take a night off when it's World War III. Go get him, King. Yeah, I can never take a night off. Something's always going to happen, right? Ones and zeros. Excuse me. Ones and zeros says, is memeing about World War III hilarious, unsettling, or both? I think it's hilarious. All these people have become so uptight. Have you noticed this? I feel like, you know, I'm a Zoomer. And to me, being a Zoomer is about, even if you're not actually a nihilist, in spirit, joking like you're a nihilist. I'm not a nihilist. I'm Catholic. I believe in God. I believe in heaven and all that. But there is something about being a Zoomer, about being desensitized and sort of the surreality or surrealism of the world, and being sort of numb to it or apathetic about it. Zoomer humor is dark. It's provocative. And I feel like for the past couple of years, it's mostly bad faith people, but I make like jokes about like obvious ironic jokes and people freak out. Even on these corners of the internet, you think it'd be cool, but now I get all these people like, hey, you're like the leader of the movement. You can't really joke like that. Everybody wants to be Robert De Niro and say, hey, that's not funny. That's not the kind of humor we do in this movement. Okay. Sorry, it's been a rough couple of weeks ever since I hung out with that cat boy. Right? I mean, that's what it is. People are very cringe. I think it's hilarious. Joking about World War III, joking about blowing up Iranian heritage sites, it's funny. It's funny because it is provocative. It's funny because it is offensive. But it's also funny because it's not true. Right? At the end of the day, you got to realize, just jokes. Just jokes, everybody. It's comedy. Comedy's what I do. Gavin says, "Hi, Nick. If you think it's a good idea, I'd really appreciate any quick elaboration on tasteful imagery and inspiring messages for America First posters, messages, and propaganda purposes. Thanks." I'm not really a big poster guy. I think the posters are kind of stupid, if you ask me. You know, it's people trying to catch lightning in a bottle multiple times. Everybody wants to replicate the success of It's Okay to Be White. And, you know, it worked, and that was a one-time thing. But, you know, we have to come up with new and novel tactics. It's got to stay fresh. We're not going to poster our way to America First. I think there's a lot of interesting things we could do, but I don't want to say anything because it could very easily be hijacked by, you know, patsies, people that are going to try and make us look bad or whatever. So I think whatever propaganda should be done, it should be done behind the scenes by, you know, trusted people that I know, so we can kind of control what it looks like, what it is. But I'll say that posters, I mean, it's not going to hurt anybody, but I mean, it's really not going to help anything either, really isn't. Elliston says, "So this is how it starts, vibe checked by Iran." We didn't really get vibe checked. We vibe checked Qassem Soleimani, and they totally bitched out. Joshua Larson says, "How intense was the bombing? I wouldn't know because Iran." Superorganism says, "Neocons want Iran to be the Zoomer Vietnam." Yeah, the Boomer's revenge. Boomers be like, "You wouldn't show me how to use my iPhone, so now you'll die." "Now you will die in Tehran." You know, "I think you're awful, Zoomers, inviting me." What? I don't even know what they'd be invited to, but you saying, "Okay, Boomer, you just wanted to make fun of me. You're just like the rest of them." And now they're going to send us to die in Iran for our for making fun of them. You know, "We didn't cut the grass. We didn't play outside." Boomer said, "All right, unplug the PlayStation. Go play outside." And we said no. And they're like, "Okay, I'm signing you up for the draft." That's what boomers did. You know, you'd be like, I'm depressed. The world is destroyed. Nothing has meaning. Houses are too expensive and wages are too low. And there's no source of community or identity. All I have is my internet friends." Boomers be like, "Go play outside." "I can't." "Okay, well, I'm going to make you go outside." Start war with Iran. Let's see. VG says, "Bro, you got to be careful about picking if you do a show or not. You know what happens. This is the real Strategic Command." That's right. If I do a show, then I de-escalate the situation. If I don't do a show, it escalates. So, yeah, that's right. This is the real Strategic Command. The world is watching. If Nick Fuentes does a show, it's like Groundhog Day. If, you know, like when the, not like the movie, but like when the groundhog comes up, and if, you know, I don't know, if he does, it's like spring. If he doesn't, it's winter. It's like if Nick Fuentes appears, if he shows up and he does the show, well, then it's de-escalation. It means that World War III is canceled, but the longer he stays away from the desk, the closer we get to midnight, the closer we get to nuclear holocaust. Terry Davis says, "The Black Cube's herd of shill cattle are attacking God's people. But God says they won't stop his divine intellect plan with the sodomite smears." So true, so true. Anonymous says, "Nick, did you know Yosemite Sam is Jewish?" It's true, look it up. His real canon last name is Rosenbaum. Who's Yosemite Sam? Oh, from Looney Tunes. Oh, the cartoon. He's Jewish? I didn't know that. I didn't watch Looney Tunes, kind of before my time. Slate says, "Do you disavow men wearing cat ears in public?" No. Ye Boy says, disavowing is gay. Ye Boy says, "Being addicted to porn cucked me, and I used to cross-dress, was into TS, and big depressed. A good percentage of groypers are probably ex-degenerates. Let's repent and save." So true. But they've got to be repentant. That's a thing. Must repent. Anonymous Chan says, "Thank God Nick is finally in Smash Bros." I don't know what that means. Chicken says, "Libertarians be like, race doesn't matter, as every road in America is renamed after a Black or Latino civil rights leader." Well, it's just like, they're just living in denial. They are denying reality. You know, libertarians, these like so-called well-meaning, like good-intentioned, your average libertarian, they think that they could just ignore identity politics. Like, oh, the left is playing identity politics. Well, they shouldn't. Okay, but they're going to, and they are, and there's nothing you can do about it. And what are you going to do about it? Well, you're playing identity politics. You should stop. Okay, well, that's not going to happen. Okay, idiot. Well, that's wrong. You know, you should actually just read Milton Friedman. Well, you should just be an individual instead. Okay, like, they're going to kill you. You're going to get your head chopped off anyway by drug cartels. You get shot by, you know, black people. You're going to get shot by people, by Democrats in Chicago and in New York. I mean, it's not going to help you. You know, white liberals are still going to take your guns and, you know, abort your babies and make your kids trans and whatever. So, like, good luck with that. Legalized ketchup says, sex? No time for that. No time for that woman. There is new post on Monkey Archive, okay? Miguel says, it would be a shame if Iran destroyed Israel. That would be tragic. Anon says, call me the U.S. military. Do not joke about the Jewish state of Israel. I'll not have that. That's a horrible, terrible joke. Anon says, call me the U.S. military, because when I say I'm pulling out, it's a lie. Also, Glorif is playing 4D chess to get Iran to nuke Israel. Disavow. I disavow. I for real disavow. I don't want anybody to get nuked. RJ says this chat, stop baiting me. RJ says this chat must be cleansed by the glory of OLS 47. I don't know what that means. It's just jokes, everybody. This is a comedy show. Nico says, wasted opportunity in the new Star Wars to not use Alexa Samuel L. Jackson's voice when all the Jedi were speaking to Rey. Okay, cringe. Ivo says, bro, come on, bro. Just enlist in the infantry, bro. Yeah, no way. DC, I'm going to enlist in the infantry of Groiper Army in Fortnite. I'm going to enlist in the America First Rust Army. DC Pagan says, I love Sticks, but he was cringy against E. Michael Jones. I actually didn't catch their debate. I should probably watch that. Ivos is probably my last super chat. Remember, Croats are men. No, they're not, but thanks. Amortan Trump says, we're about to go to war with Iran, and you're laughing. You know, Iran, American bases are being shot by missiles, and you're laughing. You're laughing. I know. How about another joke, Shapiro? How about another pointless war, Murray? No, I think we've had enough of your pointless wars. Gene, call the police. Gene, call Mossad. James Russell says, seems like the Syrian strike redux, but with America on the receiving end this time. Exactly. It's like a non-attack. That is a great observation. DC Pagan says, so late that Molyneux is stream sniping Lay Catboy. Is Molyneux streaming right now? Molyneux, more like bitch. Molyneux be like, I disavow, you know, denying. I disavow making jokes about genocide. Okay, well, I disavow being bald. What do you think about that? Let me go to his YouTube channel. I don't care. You know what? Never mind. I don't care. Let's see. Pineapple says, do you have a favorite question to test people with? Not really. I'm not really testing people. Really good comic says, pickle ricking right now. Me too. By the way, I'm also in the Middle East helping with the war. With every Iranian, I'm saying, hey, what's that behind you? Then doming them with my Kimbo sawed off every time. I'm actually disappointed. I was looking forward to going to Iran and forcing Iranians at gunpoint to kiss each other. Forcing Iranian men at gunpoint. Okay, now kiss. Oh, you're gay? You know? I was looking forward to going to Tehran and saying, all right, time for gay marriage. Hey, you, kiss. Now it's time to kiss. Hey, you, it's time to transition. Yeah, transition. Man, this country's so gay now. And that's what America's all about. So, yeah, it's very disappointing. Very disappointing. I didn't, you know. Where are we dropping, boys? I'm dropping Tehran. I'm dropping Iraq. I'm dropping Natanz. That's funny. I'm pickle wrecking at that super chat. Mr. ROC says, take the cross and carry it. That's man's path to the sky. Take the cross and carry it. Path to heaven is not littered with roses, says the song. Based song. Very true. Steve Harris says, hey, Nick, I just started running as a New Year's resolution. Do you run? And if so, what's your favorite race? I don't run. I hate running. Running is for, like, masochists. I don't understand. I don't know what I want to say about this. I just, you know, running to me is just like a sickness. What are you running from? You know, it's like you're running from death. There's something very symbolic about this, you know. It's like an oral fixation. It, like, says a lot about your mental, you know, running from what, you know? Are you that afraid of your mortality? I'm okay. You know, at a certain point, my heart will explode from eating too much Big Macs or, I don't know, like pills from Israel. And I'm okay with that. I don't need to subject myself to these high intensity, you know, workouts. It's destroying my joints. I don't need these anaerobic activities. There's simply not something I want in my life. So no, I don't run. What's my favorite race? Nice try. RJ says, taking a course in the human race. Taking a course in Yiddish literature and film from the Holocaust this semester, deep in the belly of the beast. Not sure what you mean by that. It's awfully anti-Semitic. Vela says, Nick, you must watch How the 2010s Changed Politics Forever by John Doyle. It talks largely on how the left has complete control over the media. I will watch that. John Doyle is a promising youngster. He is really evolving in a good direction. America First, I think he's got a lot of talent. He's a talented young man. I don't want to give him too much support. Don't want to, you know, hurt him in any way, but he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. America First Jew says, yo, Nick, I got Ashley Ray Goldberg's feet pics. We can all die for Israel now. Be cool. Okay, if I see those, I think I'm ready to go. I think I'm ready. I think I'm prepared. Adrix says, Wignats are cringe and gay. True. Wolves says, being against war with Iran is very anti-Semitic. Definitely agree with that. Bob Sacamonis says, showed me, brother, your stuff. He's on board. Based? Oh, cool. Thanks for sharing. Evner says, I don't support war, but I kind of want to go over there just to hit the default dance on the black and brown bodies to own the libs. Disavow. I know you're taking the Colin Kaepernick thing, yeah. When Colin Kaepernick says that America, you know, bombing Iran is like white supremacy, I'm like, oh, I changed my mind. No, kidding, just kidding. Barry says, diet soda has a ton of negative health effects. A diet button on soda lids at fast food restaurants is a six-pointed star. Really makes you think. Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I don't drink diet. Big Dick Rick Savage has watched the documentary you name-dropped last night. It was very enlightening. Think I'm going to show all my family and friends the documentary. Which one? I've talked about a couple on the show. Never mind. I know which one you're talking about. You're talking about, I can't even think of any other documentary that isn't, like, gonna get me in trouble. So, you know, I just forget it. Dylan says, are you ready for the World War III Linkin Park AMV? You were talking about Super Size Me. Yeah, Super Size Me is my favorite documentary, too. I think it's, you know, Super Size Me was intended to convince me not to eat McDonald's, but it only made me get more. Dylan says, are you ready for the World War III Linkin Park AMVs? I don't know what that is. Adman says, what would it take for you to fully jump off the Trump train, Nick? Are we there yet? I don't know. I'll know it when I see it. I don't know why people are so, like, eager to jump. Oh, why? You need to jump off the Trump train. Why? I mean, like, if he doesn't do anything, like, so egregiously bad, he's better than the alternative, right? That's the way I see it. It's a binary choice, so unless he does something that's so bad that it's worse than the left, like, that's worse than a Democratic candidate, like, that is the point at which I'll jump off. But why are people, well, you'll never jump off the Trump train. It's like, well, it's jumping off the Trump train is jumping onto the Democrat train. You may say that's not the case, but it is. It's a binary choice. If you don't vote for Trump, if you abstain, I mean, you're helping the left. So, you know, you can either have Donald Trump as the president, or you can have, like, Pete Buttigieg as the president. So, you know, if you're jumping off, you're jumping onto the other side. What will it take for me to join Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden? Like, it would have to be pretty bad. Ooga Booga says, hey, Nick, first time super chatter. What do you think about the UN hiring disarmament officers in New York? Some say it's for Virginia. I haven't heard anything about that. Anon says, like boomers had fortunate son in rock in Vietnam, zoomers are going to be quick scoping Iranians to Lil Xan, Lil Pump, and SoundCloud rappers. Yeah, our Vietnam is going to be much more aesthetic. Kevin says, tuning in and playing Command & Conquer. Schmood? Yeah, I'm schmooding. My voice is just slowly, it's just going away. Finite voice tonight. Polish American Groiper. By the way, thank you, Zoomer Clips, for getting me sick. Okay, just I want everybody in the live chat, everybody watching, to know you can thank Zoomer Clips for getting me sick. Thanks a lot. He got the whole squad sick. He got Baked Alaska sick. He got Catboy Cammy sick. He got me sick. He got all my other friends sick that are non-E celebrities. So thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. He said, oh, it's allergies to the cat. It wasn't allergies to the cat. You were sick. You're a bioweapon. Polish American says, way to push through the pain. Mortification is a great way to come closer to Christ. Oh, F off. Look up Sanctifying One's Work in St. Jose Maria Escriva. God bless you. me in, like, physical pain, my throat's hurting, cracking jokes about war with Iran. You're actually becoming closer to Christ. Yeah. Ow. Ow. I don't feel like that right now. I feel like I'm just, you know, getting closer to, I don't even know. It's like running out of steam here. Rick Savage says, Iran says, I'm just in pain right now. I feel like mortification is more like you're not like fasting, right? Or you're, I don't know, like standing on top of a post for your whole life, not like doing a show when your throat hurts. Rick Savage says, Iran says they are going to attack Israel if we respond. Time to bomb Iran. Disavow, disavow. Nicholas J. 56% says, I have started regularly attending Mass again at a beautiful Catholic church in Chicago. I'm extraordinarily white-pilled that it is always packed with young, attractive, intelligent white Catholics. Well, that's great to hear, big guy. Feels like a wheel says, no American casualties, neocons to some random grunts. We need one of us in the wreckage, brother. They expect one of us in the wreckage, brother. Yeah, that's pretty funny. You know, Ben Shapiro says this. Have we started the fire? The fire rises. Nicholas 56% says, you might even mistake it for a Groiper summit. Logos is rising, Mr. Fuentes. When the sleeping giant awakens, judgment shall be passed and the truth shall be on our side. Day is vault. Hell yeah, dude. Herminio says, you remind me of a young... Okay, I'm not going to read that. Thanks a lot for that. Thank you so much. WebDevAnon says, rather than responding with sanctions or military attacks, America should install numerous McDonald's bases on Iranian soil to liberate the country. Unironically agree. Josh says, Nick, keep doing God's work and stay safe. The world is burning. We need you to help pull out of the fire. I'm doing it. I'm doing it one show at a time. Sky Chaser says, Nick, just want your opinion on one thing. I'm a guitarist who plays hard rock, mostly Van Halen, shredder type music. Am I cringe? You're cringe if you, like, do this, okay? If you play music, I don't care, but people be like, oh, Nick, this is my hobby. I like doing this. Is this cringe? Imagine seeking the approval of me or anyone. You know, I've never done my show and been like, hey, guys, am I cringe? Because I'm a Chad, and what I say is based. You know, people are like, oh, Nick, doing this is optical, really? Yeah, because what I say is what's optical, and what I say is what's based. You know, so that's the kind of mentality you need to have. But, yeah, I think rock and roll is based. I don't really like Van Halen, though. Anon says, Trump said, I am the movement. I am what's based. I am the optics. Anon says, Trump said the whole 52 sites of a... I'm also optics because I'm a genius. Trump said the whole 52 sites of a single American is attacked, then Iran attacks a military base. Don't really see this going anywhere but escalation. Okay, well, that's because you're a brainlet. Pat Bateman says, LOL, Netanyahu is probably whispering in Trump's ear like in Lord of the Rings right now. Fatakati says, you talked about how Jira Taylor had been ousted from mainstream conservatism in the 90s. Who are the major players and where can I read about it? I don't think Jira Taylor was ever, like, mainstream. It was really more Sam Francis that was mainstream. This guy was, like, prolific. I think he wrote for The Examiner, The Washington Examiner, and, like, everyone read his column. It was syndicated all across the country. He was a close personal friend of Pat Buchanan, and he got fired after he spoke at the first American Renaissance Conference from Examiner and like totally blacklisted. His columns got way more racial. But the real battle was in the 80s and 90s. It was people like Jared Taylor, Sam Francis, Paul Gottfried, who else? Pete Brimelow, and others. Who they, the paleo conservatives, I mean, they, people like Pat Buchanan, social conservatives, immigration restrictionists, and so on, they were just like totally blacklisted by like William F. Buckley Jr., National Review, all these guys, a Weekly Standard, Bill Kristol. And you can read it, like I said, did I say Paul Gottfried? I think I, if I didn't, Paul Gottfried writes a lot about this. He's got a book called Conservatism in America. He's also got a book. Let me look it up. I don't own the book, but I know about it. I've heard a lot of this stuff like firsthand from people that are like in the know. So I don't read it from books. I hear it like from the sauce, okay, from the source. The book is The Great Purge, The Deformation of the Conservative Movement by Paul Gottfried. That's a good book on the subject. But it's very, nobody really knows much about it. That's the problem. Almost nobody. I would venture to guess that almost nobody in the conservative circles, like at the highest level or the lowest level, knows anything about the purge of paleo conservatives. It's because it was so successful. Robert Thomason says, Chad Meemer wearing an Hey Gow t-shirt and cat ears, or Virgin Trad American in a flannel shirt and blue jeans? Which way, Western man? Well, it's just, you know, it's just memes, you know? People are like, Nick, you hung out with the guy who was wearing cat ears? Well, that's bad. It's like, okay, like, oh, so where do we draw the line? You know, anime shirt, do I just have to be wearing a suit and tie all the time? Do I have to be just wearing, like, what, blue jeans? Do I have to wear, like, some ceremonial tunic, like... It's obviously a joke. It's obviously a meme. Can I not wear my Cookie Monster hat? You cannot wear a Cookie Monster hat. That is childish. It's like, okay, it's a joke. Harold says, love your analogy of the rocket and lunar craft for going beard mode. I'm guessing the eyebrows are the rocket boosters that have been detached. Haha, funny. Harbringer says, there are three reasons we are in the Middle East. Petrodollar, military-industrial complex, and Israel. Too much economic pain to disengage. Jays and boomers need their shekels. That's a good summary of it, I would say. ASDF says, Iran, Americans are the real terrorists. Yeah, it's funny. I will say, though, that the Israel stuff is very monocausal. That is the word I would use to describe it, because you're right. It is multiple factors. It is oil is a factor. You know, defense contractors are a factor, and foreign lobbies are a factor. Israel's, you know, primarily the primary one, but you've also got Saudi Arabia and the Emirates. So when people always reduce it to it's Israel lobby. Now, granted, that's the one that nobody will talk about, but it is monocausal to say it's exclusively that. you know what I mean? Like, obviously, Israel is, you know, a factor. It's not the only factor. It just happens to be the one that nobody will talk about because, you know, everyone's on the payroll and nobody wants to get, like, killed. ASDF says, Iran, I just read that. SysClips is doing the show sick. That's dedication. Yeah, well, this is what I do for you. Next time you want to countersign me on the timeline, remember my sacrifice. All these people so quick to turn on me, and this is what I do for you. I do it for the people. Michael the Archangel has called Lawrence O'Donnell a retard on Twitter, banned. Yeah, well, you can't say that. Bill says, can I get a one in chat if you're a good Christian, Shad? Being seduced by these thoughts, you ain't getting sexual with me unless I put a ring on it, honey. Cringe, dude. You ain't getting sexual with me unless I put a ring on it, honey. Bro, you just made being Volcel cringe. Fuck off, dude. Imagine a girl comes up to you and you're like, you ain't getting sex with me unless I put a ring on it. Okay, retard. No, just, you know, the Chad ignore, the Chad dismiss, femoid attention versus the, you know, the cringe. I've got a line. I've got a catchphrase. Tyronius says, what would you do with $50,000? Oh, I don't know. Probably put in the bank. ASDF says, rational actors, international anarchy based in neorealism pilled. I'm realism pilled. Lone Slav says, yo, Nick, it's my birthday. I'm Kenneth, what is it, Ken Waltz. Lone Slav says, yo, Nick, it's my birthday. Can you shout out my friend Emily? I used to force her to watch her show at work. Yeah. Well, happy birthday. Shout out to Emily. Shout out to your femoid friend, Emily. Kate, my voice is going. It's gone. It's almost gone. KV says, you sound to me as if you belong to the realist school of thought in international relations theory. Would that be a correct conclusion? Yeah, that is correct. I'm a realist. Princess Amunda says, couple quid for a cheeky pot noodle. Feel better, King. Oi! Thank you! Thank you, bruv! Thank you, mate! Cheers. Man, Anglades are just so stupid. Kidding. No, I love them. Well, their accents are funny. Oi, thank you, cheeky bruv, for the shekels, for the quid. Oi. That's the other funny part about Lolly Socks is making fun of his accent. Everyone was saying that was like a... That's so funny. Everybody was saying about the catboy thing. He's like, oh, he's flirting with him. He's making fun of his accent. No, I'm like, in a mean-spirited way, making fun of his accent, as I do with all Anglos. I do that to everybody who is Anglo. Minuteman says, because it is funny. Minuteman says, great meeting you. Excuse me. He says, great meeting you at SAS, King. Hope you found TPUSA's Culture War interesting. Much more coming soon. Working on getting my Twitter account back right now. Okay, well, good luck with that. Billy Mays says, hey, Nick, sorry for Chungus posting yesterday. Couldn't catch the show live, so I thought I'd leave you a little something. Hey, well, thanks. Never apologize for Chungus posting. We are Chungus respecters on the show. Anon says, check Trump tweet. I want to see what happened. Trump says, all is well. Missiles launched from Iran at two military bases located in Iraq. Assessment of casualties and damages taking place now. So far, so good. We have the most powerful and well-equipped military anywhere in the world by far. I will be making a statement tomorrow morning. Okay, that's pretty epic. So it looks like it's going to be good. Honestly, it looks like we're going to be okay. Let's see. ASDF says a cultural site just flew over my house. UNESCO Heritage Site just flew over my house. Billy Mays says, wasn't the U.S. 5 days away from leaving Iraq when Iran attacked? Odd behavior makes sense if you look at Mideast countries as fronts for Russia and China. I don't know if that's true, but it's possible. West Saxon says, I wonder how many times you've used World War III imminent in the title of your show. I could probably tell you, probably 4 or 5 times. Gavin says, glad to hear a rational take on things, not like these other spaz retards. Well, that's just it. This show has never been... I never want the show to be, like, predictable, or I come on this show and say, war bad, no war with Iran. You know, Trump called Iran's bluff. That's what this is. That's all it was from the start. Iran sucks, okay? I mean, they are dead. Their economy sucks. Their military is not big. Their conventional military can't challenge us. You know, they know they're boned, you know, so them lashing out is a cope. They went too far, we pushed their shit in, and you know, now they don't want any piece of it. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So now I'm against war with Iran, but I'm gonna give you the straight analysis. So yeah, so I'm patting myself on the back. Thank you, Nick. Hey big guys, this is Caracas. Can I get a geography check? I get some of them mixed up sometimes, okay? I know all the countries in the world, and I for a time I was able to name all the capitals, but I lost it. I forgot a lot of them, but I know most of them. Not Massad says, have you given Baked the cliff notes on the strikes? Yeah, I forwarded him the cliff notes. Joe says, Nick, what will you do if you are drafted? I will simply dodge the draft. Hofferman says, Nick, your show is preventing World War III from happening. I am Atlas holding up the world. Roy says, love the show. Waiting for inevitable Prager hit piece on you once Turning Point events start back up. It would be incredible to gripe that fat neocon slob. Yeah, I don't know. What do you mean Prager hit piece? I don't know what you're talking about. Roach says, chance of a war on cartels. I would sign up for it. Probably not going to happen. I don't know if I would sign up for it. Elizabeth, I'm too smart to, like, die getting shot in, like, the front lines, you know. Let's be real. Let's be realistic. Elizabeth says, it's just true. Elizabeth says, the way to avert World War III is for you to stream 24/7. Ah, yes. Rick Savage says, Sticks died in the missile strike. Ah, F. Okay, we've got a few more. Aurelius says, you seem different today, looking down, unable to make eye contact. You coomed, didn't you? No, I'm just sick. Anon says, Joe Rogan was buying DMT in bulk in Iraq and was killed in the strike. I'm crying. Also, America versus literally the only barrier between apocalypse. It sometimes feels that way, doesn't it? Yeah, I hear Joe Rogan and Sticks were the two American casualties. R.I.P. Portable Power says, thanks for the show today, King. Hope you feel better. What are your thoughts on phalangism? I'm just curious because I don't know much about it. Is it epic or is it cringe? I also don't know much about it, so I can't really tell you. Ren Paul says, red pill me on Gloria Allred. I heard you mention her on a debate, but the video cut off. Is there evidence to suggest these accusations are lies, or is she a hero? No, she's a lying, like, libtard lawyer. Correct me if I'm wrong, but she was the one that brought the accusations against Roy Moore, and she was also involved with, like, the Brett Kavanaugh thing. So she's just, like, one of these Democrat lawyers they trot out for these high-profile cases. Booper says, Trump just tweeted, very white-pilling. He seemed relieved and not angry. Yeah, told you, trust the plan. Igor says, Nick, can you forgive me for not waiting for your side of the Catboy situation and posting dumb comments with fake accounts? No, I cannot forgive you, actually. Derpy says, watch that documentary you recommended yesterday. Oh, Supersize Me? I'm glad you enjoyed that one. Mr. Mosen says, what was with the Catboy situation? We've been over this, like, a lot. ASDF says, Nick, how much money for a fake diagnosis? Doctor, what? Son, I think you may be autistic. Tell me, are you particular about your food? Nick, how hard is a cheeseburger with just ketchup and extra pickles? Yeah, okay, maybe you got me there. All right, maybe you got me there. My daily routine is upset and I freak out. I'm particular about my food, so, you know, have trouble socializing. All right, you know, just give me the slip. Just give me the note. RA says, I'm not big on running either, but I love speeding as fast as possible in my car. Can't explain it, but it's one of my favorite things in life. Ford v. Ferrari kind of touched on the feeling I'm talking about. Yeah, I love my, like, driving my car fast, too. But I drive the speed limit. You know, I don't drive in an unsafe fashion, but I do like to drive fast. Harold says, Iran, we want peace. Sends Persian carpet, U.S. whatever. Sends carpet bombs, based. Gay Iran backing down. Yeah, fuck all these Iran people that are like, Iran is actually based. Iran's a pussy, dude. Iran just backed down. America's epic. America's got the biggest penis. And yeah, and we're just going to bomb you with impunity. And what are you going to do about it? There's something epic about that. I don't even care if ultimately it's in Israel's interest. There's something epic about just, you know, you can't mess with us. I will never not think that's epic. I know there's elements of that that are cringe, but certain elements are also based, and you must admit this. Marcus says, hey, buddy, just got done watching that documentary about Supersize Me. Bit of a time commitment, but very worth it. I'm glad you liked it. I like the part about the guy that eats 3 Big Macs every day. That's my favorite part. Or when they sing Rock and Roll McDonald's. Wolves says, imagine not trusting the plan. I can't. Matt says, hey, Nick, love the show. You're the best in the biz. Thanks. It's true. Have you ever heard of the essay, What Is It? By Crispin Glover. It is unironically based in Red Pill. I think you'd really like it. Let's see. Oh, that's an actor. It's a surrealist film, not an essay. Okay, this seems actually bad. It seems like something I would not like. Rick Savage just sat through all 6 hours of it in school today. It was a great story. I don't think Supersize Me is 6 hours. I think it's only like an hour and a half. Snake Eater says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Simple as. Yeah, simple as this. RJ says, what would you do with $80 million? Oh, no. I would retire. No, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably, what would I do with $80 million? I'd build the America First compound for real. Armand says, have you seen the documentary project for A New American Century by the same guy who did 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor? Adding honey, lemon in your tea helps. No, I did not see that documentary. I'll have to watch it. But yeah, PNAC is one of the most pernicious forces in America. GH says, what is it like being a self-hating Mexican? JK, LOL. Wouldn't know. I really come across as like self-hating, right? Chris says, Israel is at it again. When will so-called conservatives wake up and see Israel does not work in our interest? Keep up the good work, Nick. Well, thanks. I don't know, man. We have to break the spell. Anonymous Tipper says, this is our last super chat from Bangor, Maine. Woo. Okay, well, thanks. RA says, America's got the biggest penis. Unironically, the most high-quality take on all things political right here. Unironically true. 2-2 says, the dislikes are bigger than average. What did you say, big guy? It's just a raid. By the way, I was watching, everyone's like, oh, the dislikes were so bad on last night's show. And, like, At one point earlier today, the dislikes were 2,100 on last night's video, and then they were down to 1,800. And what does that tell you? It means that 300 likes were fake and were deleted by YouTube, which means that it is being astroturfed. That proves it. You know, I saw it yesterday in the afternoon, or rather, I saw it today in the afternoon, the likes on yesterday's video were at 2,100 plus, dislikes were at 2,100 plus, and within hours, it was down to 1,800. That means they deleted 300 or 400 dislikes. That means 300 or 400 fake accounts were set up to dislike the video, which, you know, everybody was saying, oh no, Nick, what disinformation, what campaign, you know, it's obviously coordinated. So just ignore. America First is unstoppable. Let's see. Kip Kat says Trump canceled his speech so Barron can watch America First. He didn't tweet till he said it was a pansy response. Yeah. Bob Sakamoto says hello. Hello. RJ says last super chat check. Caramelized Onion says thanks, Nick, for doing the show. Get well soon. Thanks. Thank you for perpetuating the show also. Rick Savage says thoughts on David Icke. I think he's based, but kind of missing the mark a little bit. He won't name them. Okay, looks like that's the last super chat. That's going to do it for us on the show tonight. Jeez, I'm like dead, dude. I'm sick. So that's going to do it for us on the show. Remember to sign up for the email list. If we get banned on YouTube, that's the only way you can follow me. Go to NicholasJFuentes.com, put your email in, and you can follow us if we get banned from YouTube, which could happen. I feel like I've said things that are against community guidelines. It's just jokes, though, so hopefully not. But be sure to do that. Sign up for Telegram, t.me/NickJFuentes1. Remember to subscribe to this channel. Leave a comment. Click the notification bell to be notified every time I go live. Give me a big thumbs up. Remember, the show is live every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Nicholas J. Fuentes. As always, this is America First. Thanks for watching. Thanks to everybody who super chatted. Thanks to everybody that watched the show. We love you. And I will see you tomorrow, hopefully. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.